So, just briefly before we start, what are we? What are you talking about? What are you sort of going to be focusing on?
So I used to be a Chippendale.
Wait, sorry.
It just got interesting.
Jen, I had no idea.
I'm Todd Lyons.
I'm Natalie Crandall.
I'm Valeria Sosa.
And I'm Simone Gasco.
And this is the Innovate on Demand podcast. Telework remains a contentious issue in the public service. Some groups use it extensively. Others grant it only in extreme circumstances and for limited periods of time, requiring proof of need in order to prolong the arrangement. Because, after all, how can you manage people you can't see? And how could a manager ever possibly consider teleworking? Let's find out.
Welcome, Simone. Very happy to have you here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm Simple Simon, and I work for the federal government, been working there for 20 years, and I work out of Mont-Tremblant on a full-time base.
Very nice. That's very amazing. Nice. Can you tell us how that came about?
Well, to make a long story short, I was like everybody else in the race and enjoying the career so far in the public service. And I've reached the level of acting director general at the X3 level. I was qualified in pools. And after a few months into the job, I think in 6 or 7 months, I sat down with my ADM and a great guy, and he asked me how I was doing. I said, actually, I really don't like it. I'm not enjoying my time right now. I have young kids. And when I was working for him, we had provided some statistics in terms of mobile workers and teleworkers. And he says, geez, the numbers are low in the NCR. So I thought that was an opportunity. I've talked to my wife about it. She thought it was the least crazy idea I've had to move to Mont-Tremblant on a full-time base. Because trust me, we've had a little condo on the mountain, ski in, ski out for 5 years. And on Sunday nights, you have no idea what I thought about that could be a actual good idea to move there on a full-time base. And so we both talked to our senior management, and I was willing to take a demotion to do that. So at first he thought I was kidding. Hey, Simon, you're a funny guy, Simon. You always have a joke. No, it's not a joke. Actually, I'm interested into this. And he was actually very supportive about it. Then it got a little bit spicier. So, but at the end of the day, I'm in Tremblant full-time now and quite enjoying my time.
So we have to ask you, what do you mean by spicier?
I was curious too. I'm not going to lie.
Well, it just got more complicated in the sense that, I was acting EX3. I was in pools. I was thinking that I wanted to be appointed.
And what year was this, just for context?
It was about a year and a half ago. Last January 2018, I think, would be the best, closest ballpark. Okay. He was very supportive. My wife's deputy minister was actually very supportive too, and she's at private counsel office. What? Somebody teleworks from the private counsel office? Actually, they do. But when we came down to the approvals, in my department, we're very good at complicating things, and especially for approvals. So in front of the executive management committee, there was a long, difficult discussions about whether executives should be able to telework or not on a full-time base. And there was a decision, unilateral decision, that the answer was no.
This was just within your department?
Within my department. Mm-hmm. So I took a demotion voluntarily, which people thought was a crazy move. But then for those of them who follow my Facebook or, Instagram, they see that this was the best thing we've ever done in a long time. So quite happy to be doing it right now as we speak.
Yeah.
That was the complicated things. My ADM felt so bad because he was very supportive at my substantive level. But unfortunately, we had to take a demotion. He felt really bad about it. I didn't. I was willing to do that.
So, and how long did that process take?
Well, to be honest, it didn't take that long. We were just, going through the motions. And while that process was being done, I knew I had his support. I knew I was moving in the right direction. So I kept doing what I had to do. Sold my house. Happened a little faster than I thought it would. So what happened, and then we were building our house in Mont-Tremblant, and so our condo is about 500 square feet.
Right. So how many young kids did you say you had?
Two.
Okay.
And an old boxer dog. So
excellent.
Four of us in a one-bedroom, one-bathroom condo on a full-time base because the kids started school in Tremblant in August. And we moved into our house in December. So for a few months, my wife and I were sitting at both ends of the very small kitchen table we've had. This was our telework environment. And
Eye on the prize.
Well, the funny part was, you know, like we were always in teleconference or video conferencing and things like that. So we would look at each other like, who are you video conferencing with? Well, so-and-so. Okay, fine. I'll go into the bedroom. And then, you know, we'd move or be sitting on the terrace or whatever. And it worked.
Well, it's funny. I mean, you're not actually sharing any less space than most people share with their cubicle mate.
Except when you have an old boxer who's laying under the table and has some digestive issues, and then you realize.
So now let's tell us about some of the highs and lows about mobility. And I think you're probably one of the champions for mobility now.
Well, champions, I'm not sure, but I certainly am a bit advocate for it. So my whole team is what we consider extremely mobile. I mean, you saw me here. I arrived a little early, logged myself in. I can work from anywhere. I was actually holding a teleconference in the car on the way here. So there's no limit to how I work on an everyday base whenever I need to. So at first, it was slightly disruptive, right? You know, I've had all kinds of conversations with different people about, but Simon, Nick, you're going to feel alone. You're going to be feeling isolated, you know, you're not going to be part of the culture in the office anymore. But one of the director generals I work with today, and he would say himself, he's a bit of a dinosaur, like he's an old school guy. And he said to me, at first, I didn't believe you'd pull it off. But he says, I see you more than I've ever seen you before on video and through teleconference and everything else. And I can feel your presence. And he says, you know, I'm impressed. I didn't think it would work, but it does, and it does really, really well. So one converted down.
Yeah.
A few more to go.
Yeah, a few hundred thousand to go.
So would you say, like, the process of getting the approval, what in your view is the biggest blocker to that? Like, the fact, it breaks my heart that you had to take the demotion to do this, but, you know, I'm fairly confident that won't be a permanent thing for you. You'll fly through. But I mean, we need to break and change this culture around mobility and the whole topic of it. And so if you look back on that, what is the biggest obstacle you faced, you think? Trust?
So, well, not necessarily. I think the biggest obstacle, to be honest, is lack of awareness. I don't think people are aware of what it is. And then we started having more and more conversation. A lot of people approach us. We make ourselves very approachable to talk about the topic. That's one of the reasons I'm with you guys today. But I find it's very interesting to discover how some people think about some issues. I'll give you an example. Some fairly senior management do not believe in telework or mobile working. They don't think it works. They don't think it can work, especially not in leadership positions. Oh my God, that's forbidden. Okay. But then you ask them, but why? And they say, well, I won't be able to see my folks. You know, the presence that I think, you know, my leadership brings into the workplace as a symbol of, you know, the rigor, the management, being there in case of a crisis and everything else. And so you think about it and you go, okay, that's great. That's great. And do you have any regional colleagues or regional employees? Oh, yeah. How does that work? Oh, super well. We have the good technology, see them often. It works great. And they report to you. Yeah. So that works. Yes. And then they think about it. And then, you know, about the seeing part and the supervision. I'm sure our clerk comes in into the office and thinks, gee, I wonder if the president of the school's working right now. Right? Because you can't see him.
Right. Of course.
Of course.
I wonder if he's at home watching Netflix in his pajamas, right?
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Now, I do work in my pajamas sometimes. I'm just kidding. I do take time to dress up in the morning. But seriously, like, these paradigms are being thrown at us on an everyday basis. Now, in terms of the leadership presence and the culture and the group dynamics, well, it changes and it morphs and it becomes a virtual culture, a virtual leadership. The fact that I'm online almost every day, and you can bet on that, like from 8:30 till 5:30, I'm going to be there. So I deliver, I answer, I approve, I comment. The speed at which I do things drives the speed of the team. What about if there's a crisis at work? Well, my team's not at work. My team's everywhere. So the likelihood of a crisis at work is none. Like work crisis that we need to work on, well, that we have a lot of, and we do it, and we can do it super fast. And then it's like, yeah, but Simon, it's more complicated when people are remote. Oh, really? Last time I tried to set an interdepartmental committee going in a boardroom, most people arrived late because there were traffic issues, then try to get a pass at security, and then it's one by one, and then everything else. Versus I set up a WebEx teleconference in 2 seconds, and there you go. I can call in a meeting, multi-departmental meeting, in probably less than 2 or 3 minutes. And people are right on. And so, like, these are comparable issues. Yeah, but what about network issues? Well, it's the same thing as traffic and traveling and, you know, the securities and everything else. Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, then you start demystifying what this is all about. Like, you know, think about all the regional ADMs that we know of and that we have. Their boss are in Ottawa. And as soon as your boss is not in the same building or not in the same city, if the relationship works and you trust your employee to be delivering and you're noticing that they do, whether they are in the office or whether they're at home, is that going to make a difference? Because if you're not in the same building or not in the same city, you will reach them by email, by text message, by instant message, or by video conference. So what is the difference? So then it, you know, it becomes the, yeah, but it creates a precedent and then everybody's going to ask for it. Now, here's something that make you laugh because I like to be a little bit provocative from time to time, and I love the HR folks, but I think Okra right now is not at the cutting edge of this movement that's happening, which is actually led by PSPC's Modern Workplace and PCO's Beyond 2020. And I truly hope that Okra will step up and get into the game with this. But I was looking at the different policies that we had on mobile working and teleworking, and just the fact that we're talking about it demonstrate that it's still not an acquired taste for the fact that it's more productive, it's more flexible, it's easier to recruit that way, maintain and retain. And anyway, so I was reading some of the policies and I talked to some of my HR colleagues and, you know, they're fantastic, by the way, and they were picking up the file. And so I looked at them and I said, so I was reading your policy and, you know, telework should be approved by management. Yes. But if your productivity goes down, it says that, you know, the telework will probably be the first thing that's removed. Oh, absolutely. Okay. So let me get this straight. If your performance go down, first level of punishment is we're calling you back into the office. So the going to the office is a punishment. They weren't.
Hey. I've had a few conversations like this with them before. I know the look on your face very well.
So they weren't too sure what to do with that one, right?
Yeah.
And from then on, we had a different kind of conversation in terms of, don't tell me what are the conditions that can be met in order to telework. If I was a bit more provocative, I'd tell you that if your job is 99% in front of a computer or in a meeting, you can probably telework. Mm-hmm. You should. You'd be more productive. We are seeing some ADMs. PSBC really is leading the charge on that front. And some of their ADMs actually telework every week, 1 or 2 days a week. It just brings more productivity to the table. That's that simple. So when we have a bit of an old school approach to mobile working and teleworking and everything else. Another thing, with my folks in finance, we've implemented an activity-based workplace. So a much nicer setup, you know, for collaboration and, you know, newer technologies. It really looks great. They were telling me that, you know, somebody who's mobile and doesn't have a fixed office costs approximately $8,000 a year. In activity-based workplace, it's demonstrated that 30% of offices at all times are empty, maybe up to 40% according to the industry. So technically, we went with a conservative approach, and instead of 100 employees for 100 desks, we have assigned 120 employees to 100 desks. It works perfectly. People actually love it. People don't want to go back to the old setup of the cubicle farms and everything else. But then I've pushed it a little further, and I said, well, if you work from the activity-based workplace, whether you're in there for meetings or other good reasons that you believe you need to come in, or whether you're just the kind of person that likes to be in the office 1, 2, 3, 4 days a week, whatever, that's fine. The rest of the time you can work from home. So we were going about this, and so I'm coming back to the fantastic telework, mobile working policy, or alternative work arrangements, now they call it, I believe. And if you are assigned to a head office and you are asked to come to the head office, your travel is not paid. Your parking is not paid. Because that's your attached office, right? That's the reporting office that you're attached to. Mm-hmm. So
providing a further disincentive for anyone to want to come into the office.
Well, I work from home full time. So technically, yeah. I save $8,000 a year to the government because I'm fully set up at home. Mm-hmm. But my colleagues who work out of different, you know, even an office on the other end of Ottawa at the West End, if he's asked to come into the office, you know, he will probably get his parking paid and things like that.
Yeah.
Not us. Yeah. Not the mobile worker. Yeah. And we're always on. I'm always reachable. Like, you know, my ADM knows he can reach me at any time. Yeah. If it's outside of office hours, just tweet me a message. I'll reply. So it's these kinds of things that I think we're still in the old ways of thinking, in the old paradigm shift.
I agree. I think one of the most fundamental things we need to do to actually nail this culture shift is actually start living it. So it's not for me. I don't even want to talk about why telework or mobility is important. For me, it's like, it's imperative. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have it, I feel like if you're a hiring manager, you should have to explain why somebody cannot telework, not give an explanation as to why someone can, or say why someone can't have flexible work arrangements. If there's not a reasonable work, you know, operational requirement for that, I think that's part of the culture shift we really desperately need in the federal government. So the question I would ask is, given your experience, do you think that culture shift would be more achievable if it's a movement from employees who are saying, this is what I'm looking for and this is the only kind of job I'm going to take, or whatever that looks like, or, you know, from the executive, from a top-down leadership stance? I mean, obviously, I know that, you know, if we do both, it'll probably be the best. But I'm just wondering what you think is the most effective right now. I personally haven't had a job since I returned from maternity leave in the federal government in 2015 that has not afforded me flexible work arrangements. I don't choose to telework full-time, but I do some teleworking and flexible work scheduling every single week.
Oh, that's awesome. I think it's a bit of both. So no projects will succeed without the proper sponsor, without the proper visibility from senior management and implications, right? And too often our middle management community is targeted as being the one resisting because, you know, we've approved the right policies, we've done everything right. So if it's not working, it's probably because the supervisors are not allowing it. Well, it's not true. I mean, it goes with the culture. And when you unilaterally declare that executives can't telework full time, based on what?
You tell all these people that they're guardians of the policies. They're not shepherds of it, right?
Well, that's the thing, right? And I think you do have a mouvement en masse right now where the newer employees or the dynamic employees that know their worth on the market, whether in the public service or even outside, will ask for it. And I think that also helps a lot. Now, in terms of changing the culture, though, there's a lot of things that we need to do. For example, I don't know if you've heard of Olivia Neal. She's from the UK. So Olivia Neal was looking at this, and in the UK, they're a little bit ahead of us in terms of activity-based workplace and the way we do things. And she was looking at, you know, the different offices, and she noticed that, you know, a manager has a slightly bigger cupboard than, you know, the employee. And then the director or the executives and the DGs have a bigger cupboard. And she was saying in her very pretty English accent, like, is this what it came down to? It's the size of the cupboard that matters. And I thought she was bang on. People just, you know, hold on to these things. I've heard an ADM saying, I'm not going to do like the PSBC ADM in charge of workplace modernization and give up my corner office. I worked all my career to get that. Okay, I understand the culture, the paradigms, but at the same time, you don't have to go unilaterally one way or the other.
Yeah.
I think it's just a driver of enabling and allowing. Now, the other part, so we've talked about senior leadership sponsoring, I think is important. I think there's a mouvement en masse. More and more employees are asking for it. And trust me, I tell everybody, did you even ask?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And often I tell employees, you're at fault. If you haven't asked, don't blame your management. You didn't even ask. So that's the other part. And the third one, though, is, you know, with the political movements that we've seen when, you know, we went downsizing the public service. And then after that, we started growing back, but buildings were sold. We were running out of space. So activity-based workplace, those stats now became all of a sudden very interesting and very important. The cost saving also is a major driver, but we are also running out of space. And this is one of the things that, you know, is quite important in terms of, you know, pushing further the mobile aspects of work. The last one that we don't talk about enough, and that drives me absolutely crazy, and I think it shows a little bit of limited views or strategic positioning of the government of Canada as a whole, is we are the government of Canada. We should be well represented coast to coast to coast.
Yes.
We somewhat are, with big offices, you know, in major cities. But I can't tell you enough the representations of having, you know, senior public servants sitting in areas where usually the public service is nowhere to be found, the federal public service is nowhere to be found, being able to represent the country, the interests of the country, talk about what we do in the government, explain situations to folks. Like, a lot of people don't understand the complexity that we deal with when you have a little issue, but it's an issue that has an impact coast to coast to coast. Well, yeah. Okay, well, you go from linguistic issues to social issues, whether it's, the Aboriginal issues or whether it's big cities versus regions and everything else. And you have that capability of at least providing a different perspective on things. And I can't tell you how many times people just thank us for and appreciate the fact that, you know, the federal government does awesome things, but it's complex. It's big, you know, we're the biggest employer. Okay. Well, that has an impact. And on top of that, if you think about it, so I'm in Mont-Tremblant. Okay. Everybody thinks, oh, Mont-Tremblant. That's, you know, that this mountain and Mario Lemieux's castle, which is for sale for $22 million, by the way, Todd, if you're interested for a little cottage. but you know, like everybody thinks of that in Mont-Tremblant, but Mont-Tremblant is a tourist industry. Mm-hmm. So the city per se, like this, the Mont-Tremblant city and Saint-Gervais is actually low income. It's, the average family income is lower than in the rest of Canada.
Yes.
My kids' primary school, on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being poor, are at 7. People don't understand what Tremblant really is, or the back office of Mont-Tremblant, if you want. If you think about two senior officers in the public service working in Mont-Tremblant with the federal public service salaries and social advantages, the wealth that we bring in the community, whether in the fact that my wife spends way too much money or whether from the fact that, you know, we are involved on...
I'm going to tell you said that. I will.
Can you cut that part? Oops.
This is also staying in the show.
But if you think about it, we also are very involved in our communities and, you know, happy to, you know, support. So the impact, the economical impact, the social impact of being and enabling people to work and go back to their communities and work for the federal government. I don't understand why there's not more vision about this and how to do that. You don't need big offices. I have a Service Canada office in Saint Agathe. That's about 20, 25 minutes from my house. Why can't I go hotel there when I need to? We're not structured yet that way, but I know PSBC is pushing towards that direction.
We're starting. We have a few here. Co-working sites.
Well, the 5 co-working sites. Mm-hmm. So if I...
They haven't opened one in Mont-Tremblant yet, though. I will confirm that.
Well, you know, I'm going to be working on this. Trust me. And the other thing I need to figure out is, like, Todd, I don't know if you know about like a Bluetooth microphone that would cut the wind sound when I'm skiing.
I've been working on a pretty modest budget so far, but I could look around.
But anyway, you see where I'm going with this, right? Yeah. The power of representation of the government of Canada in smaller communities where there are usually no offices or no services from the federal, but the fact that you have public servants involved in their communities, I think has a
We're limiting our talent pool to those who are able and willing to live in the big hubs, first of all. Second of all, I recently read a post from a colleague of mine, or a previous colleague of mine, Frank Asu, who started the Flex GC, and he was talking about mobility in terms of the reconciliation agenda. Mm-hmm. And just saying, for example, some of our Indigenous citizens would be more likely to come and work for the federal government and have a career if they had more teleworking possibilities and didn't have to leave their homes.
So we're lucky where I work because, you know, we have a senior management in my branch that is visionary. And it started a few years back. We pride ourselves in being a coast-to-coast-to-coast organization. People can work from anywhere. They have to be tied to a hub for policy purposes, but they can work from anywhere. On top of that, we have one of our senior leaders in this branch who happens to live on the reserve. His contacts in his communities are through the roof. Like, he is very involved and loves it. And at some point was talking about it, and we just opened the door, and he went with the leadership of a great leader into the community and organized Hakka girls, like, in the communities, on the reserves, and, you know, involved kids in primary, secondary school, talked about the federal, the student employment programs, all kinds of other programs to help the like people from these communities find jobs. But you know what? The federal provided money to those programs, but weren't hiring from them. That, like, talk about not connecting the dots, but that right. guy did. And all of a sudden, you have all of these people walking in, proud of where they come from, going back to their community saying, I'm working from here for the federal government, from anywhere in Canada. Just think about the impact that these women, yeah. these men, these kids have on, you know, the local perspective
yeah.
When it comes to job opportunities, growth and development. And so from that perspective, mobile working, because of course people associate me to telework, but it's not, I work from home most of the time, but I work from anywhere
yes.
very often as well. But think about the impact that that has overall in our country. And I find this is absolutely fantastic. And think about people with big families, you know, who have kids and everything else. One of my favorite meal in the day now is now breakfast. Last year, breakfast was the thing I grabbed on the corner of, you know, the table between shouting, get dressed, you know,
put your brush shoes your teeth, on.
Where are you? Hurry up. And then, you know, you put the kids into the yellow bus and you wait for the yellow bus to leave and then you rush to work. That was breakfast. Today, breakfast is my kids leave the home at 7:05. You know, I drop them. I come back home. It's 7:07. What do I do until 8:30? Before I log in, I can, like, read, listen to the news. We bought a Nespresso machine. I can actually drink my coffee out of a normal cup, not of a travel cup or travel mug. Ooh. I can, you know.
Like ceramic?
Yeah.
Oh,
one of those nice ones.
Amazing.
Hey. You bring up the environmental impact on that one, too.
Of course. Of course. Like, I've been doing the 417 for the past 3 days because I've been in town on training and coming to see you guys, and then I'm going to Stratosphere. What are all these people doing? You know, they're all in their car, and they're already, like, they seem stressed. They seem annoyed. It's polluting. Angry. They're already angry.
It's insanity. Every day. Every day, it's insanity.
God, man.
I have to say that I've been teleworking for a bit now, just like 2 to 3 days a week. And I love it. I love it for, to me, it's time.
Yes.
The value of time. I don't waste an hour commuting one way and then back another way. Little things like that, being able to spend the time to have breakfast with my daughter before I bring her, you know, to daycare and then come back and I'm still online by 8:30. Being able to not have to deal with the stresses of traffic. If I want a coffee, I just walk up to my Nespresso machine. I don't have to take a giant walk all the way to Tim Hortons and or wherever or Bridgehead. I think it's those little things also that people don't actually consider. I just want to rewind a bit because I just want to share sort of a bit of an anecdote. I was recently, a few months ago, I interviewed for a team, and it was a team working on a very innovative project, but it was a young manager. It was a new manager. And I asked about teleworking and they said, no, they said, unfortunately, we can't really promise that for sure you'll be able to telework, you know, even one day a week for certain, which that kind of blew my mind. But in the moment, what I realized what was coming from this person is a level of uncertainty. They just didn't have the confidence yet to be able to manage that. It was too much uncertainty for them because they were just still too new in that position. So that's one thing. And another thing that I wanted to bring to you, and I'm going to ask you about this, I was recently having a conversation about this with a senior executive. And one point that they brought up was, what about those conversations that happen after you've turned off the WebEx? That are important to this person. You know, we have a conversation, other people are gone, the people that weren't there, and, you know, we have important discussions. The in-person passing. This was another thing that the young manager had brought up to me, that their director really values being able to just off the cuff find you and have a conversation on the file. So I guess I'm just asking, what do you think about that? That's one of people's excuses. Is it valid? Is it not?
So you said so many great things. So let me start with first kids. I've read something lately and it's going on through Facebook. From the day you have a kid, you have about 18 summers to spend with them, mm-hmm. right? 18. My daughter's 11, my son's 9. So I'm down to about another 8 or 9 maybe. And, they kind of grow up and do something else. So that's one thing. So time's valuable and time, you were talking about time at home, but the fact that you can actually cook yourself meals mm-hmm. at lunch, take a 2-minute break, throw something in the oven, and by the time you actually hang up and close your computer, you have great food on the table. Not just whatever's the quickest that you can do, because then you got to go drive them to sport and you left the office at 5 and made it at 6 at the whatever daycare. And then, they have a class at 6:30 or 7 and you're rushed. So totally agree with you on that. In terms of managers who don't feel comfortable about teleworking, I've hired a manager. When he came in, he says, I don't like teleworking. I'm not comfortable doing it. I said, well, that's your choice. I totally respect that. But I'm telling you, all your employees, I've told them, they can telework or work remotely or be mobile. And they're all assigned to the activity-based workplace. So it's on assigned seating. So good luck finding them if you don't use the tools. So he came in and, he was coming in the office, Monday morning, 8:30 on the dot. He was there, logged in. He was, and leave at 5:30 on Friday, whatever. And then he started. I'll try it. He'll try what? I'll try working from home one day. So I see him and he's online and on video and he's sitting in his kitchen at the kitchen counter on a stool.
Oh dear.
Yeah. It's like, so how you like it? Oh, it's not as comfortable as I thought it'd be. Well, first get rid of the stool, man. Buy yourself a chair. Like, get set up, right?
Yeah.
So then we've talked to our admin in our group and he got set up. He was telling someone the day before yesterday, he says, before I met Simon, no way I was going to telework. I would never work from home. I used to be anxious about the fact that, I was going to work from home because I'm going to miss the water cooler conversation. I'm going to miss the meetings. I'm going to miss the body language. I'm going to miss all of these things that are so important in the office, right? And he says, today, when the day I have to go to the office, I'm anxious because I know in the morning I'm going to be rushed. I know I'm going to rush my kids. I know I'm going to get to the office. I know I'm not going to be as productive. I know I'm going to be disrupted. And then I know I'm going to need to rush out. And I know I'm going to need to rush my kids back home. And then I know I'm not going to eat well. And all of that. But he tried at his speed mm-hmm. with the support. One by one, step by step. And then when he was properly trained on how to manage his own employees teleworking, he was happy. So the last part of the very good comments you made was, but what about these conversations after a meeting, water cooler conversations, bump in conversations? So my team's full mobile. Very rarely will we have a meeting where more than 2 or 3 of them are in the same room. Very rarely. So the likelihood of that happening is actually low. But what about with other meetings? Well, that's when it gets to the awareness of how to better manage. If you're going to start mobile working, supporting teleworking and everything else, as soon as you have one employee doing it, you should support everybody. Here's why. It's the same thing as if you have one employee in another building, just one. Because if you're the kind of manager that, will at the beginning of the day do a round and say hi or a stand-up meeting, but you have somebody in another meeting, then what happens? They miss out. What about if you're the manager that, likes to have these little, roundabouts and everything else? And this is where it gets to be an awareness training. And I know the Canada School is moving slowly into training the managers on mobile worker management and telework management, and which is a great initiative. But these can be overcome. It's a matter of credibility, and the onus is on the actual employee being mobile. Because there are a lot of meetings and a lot of topics that, if you don't talk to Simon about it, you know, you got to be careful. It will not happen. Or if he doesn't know about it and you show up at the meeting and you surprise him, you know, he's not going to be happy about it. So why don't you give him a call and tell him that we've talked and just brief him on it? Okay, great. That's all I need, right? And it's the same thing with everybody in my team. We have clear mandates in our organization, and those clear mandates, if you're talking about something that touches our mandate, we'll make sure that we're aware of it. And people know us, and they know they can reach us faster than having to walk to our office, just an SMS message, a text message, whatever.
I think you touched on something critical there, that it's not by email.
No.
The picking up the phone, like mobile working, we have my whole team, all of us have mobility and that. And I speak to them on the phone more than I've spoken to any people in a decade on the phone.
And here's another thing that I'm going to try, and I have no idea what this is going to give and lead to. I've met with some very smart folks from Policy Horizon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Policy Horizon, if you want to meet and you want to go and visit an organization that is extremely mobile, super well organized that front, go meet them. They have fun doing it. So when we met with them, I actually bought similar technologies than the one they're using. Like, for example, we have projectors or video conferencing systems like I see in this room, like the good old big TVs and, you know, camera sets and fairly poor microphones that, you know, you'll hear paper shuffling on the table. Anyway, that's usually what we are able to buy. Over there, they showed me the new Riva technology. It's a projector that you can interact on the wall while it's projecting, but people can interact from anywhere across the country on the same piece of work that you guys are working on. So if a bunch of people are working on a TB sub or a memorandum to cabinet from different departments, they can be working on the same document while some people are in a boardroom doing it as well. So it's this interactive technology. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Bought this, we're gonna try it, doing a proof of concept, but it works very well at Policy Horizon. But the one thing that I bought, that I am even skeptical of, but I trust my colleagues, so we are trying this technology, are robots.
Oh, I have some on order for our team too.
A little segue.
The telepresence.
The little segue telepresence robot. They said, Simon, we were more skeptical than you were about this, but these robots are changing the way we are teleworking. And we were visiting their offices, and then at some point, two robots, you know, bump into each other, or seem to.
Right.
They were actually hugging and saying hello.
Well, first we had to get through all the jokes, right?
Yeah. Right.
Oh, network malfunction. Yeah.
Right.
Or, you know, bad driver, whatever. So we went through all of these. And then the guy looks at us. He goes, no, that's the bumping conversations you were talking about that are so important. There you go. And they were actually face to face talking to each other. That's it.
Funny.
So we were amazed at this. And so we're trying this technology. But everybody I talk about this, except you two, are usually like looking at me going, you bought what? To do what? Simon, this is going to be a toy that you're going to be racing through the corridors with, like, Todd. Okay, well, the likelihood that I try it for sure is very, very high. But that being said, it seems to be a technology that we've underutilized.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have service points for all our departments. But, you know, we usually oblige people to be present, be on site. Well, guess what? That's the future.
Yeah.
You know, like when you think of a Service Canada person could actually be remote working from one of the reserves. Wouldn't that be cool?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Although, you know what would be disappointing is if the next time I get to go to a really fun and exciting conference somewhere, my boss makes me send my telepresence robot.
Well, okay. There's a downfall to it.
Kidding.
I hadn't thought about one, but you just said one. Yeah, actually, it's true. It's true. So those are coming. We're going to do proof of concepts on those ones for sure.
And they're actually not that expensive.
No.
How much do you
it's
know?
It's like $2,000, $3,000, depending on. So if you look at a teleconference or video conferencing system in a boardroom, you're talking about $10,000, $15,000 plus the setup and everything else, right? Where I work, we have this beautiful building. We have many floors in that building, and there's three conference rooms equipped with video conferencing. One of them, only an admin assistant is smart enough to make the video conferencing system work.
Right.
Okay, it's one of those. Yeah.
We all have equipment and rooms like that where you're like, oh my goodness, someone calls someone, you like 20 people in the room and no one can
but
get
think
anything
about
to
it.
Work.
You
it's
can
awful.
Have like almost 10 people with those little robots going around before you have to book like one video conferencing system into a boardroom to be installed.
I'm just imagining myself walking down the hall with like all these robots talking to me as I go down the hall. It's awesome. I can't wait.
But you know what? At Policy Horizon, they said you don't understand how much people love these robots. First of all, we don't have enough. I think they have only 6, but they're increasing their numbers. Yeah. Second, at Halloween.
Right. Dressing them up.
They dress them up. At Christmas, they dress them up. I'm telling you, these robots, like they have names for the robots too.
Right.
Like one's called Susie.
One's called Polly. I had an altercation with Polly once, but anyways.
There you go.
So. I have to say, I feel like I'd be dangerous managing one of those robots. I'd go up to people from behind, what you doing?
You know, I'm going to try that for sure too.
I'm not going to lie, when we get our telepresence robots, I'm going to borrow one for a day for sure.
Yeah, but you know, like the best part of where I work is that, you know, like senior management's looking forward to try them out. I think our ADM is probably the most excited kid on the corner to try one of those damn robots. And we're looking forward to have them.
And so how are you going to share these lessons, I guess, lessons learned or so, what are you doing to share what your experience?
I do a lot of mentoring. So it's amazing. I used to do a lot of mentoring of people who were a bit like me and my wife, which are, you know, we're like considered go-getter and, you know, having beautiful careers. And I ended up an executive. I was, 26, 27, 28, I don't know. And then an EX3, I was 37, 38. So, you know, wow, what a great career. Okay, but worked hard for it. But now that I took a step back and that I'm enjoying life, and trust me, people wonder, how do you have time to do this? I finish work. I can actually have supper, go to the gym, come back and go fishing in the same night. Mm-hmm. Try that at home. Yeah. And my son may have a soccer practice or something else, or my daughter has like whatever sport practice too. So when you're trying to put all of this together, when I took my step back, and it was a bit of a shock because my wife was a DG. I was a DG, I think. And people are like, what are those two young ones doing? They're crazy. But then I started going to these forums and, you know, getting involved differently into a different community now, stepping outside of the ones I knew and trying something different. I started getting requests for mentoring of people who did not know what to do if they didn't want to go up. Because, okay, don't get me started on the talent management plans and on the performance management.
Don't get her started on that. Don't get me started, Simon. We'll be here until tomorrow.
It'll be a different show, okay. Everyone.
We're still supporting this useless PMA stuff.
Oh. Anyway.
Preach.
This is my favorite rant on the planet. Okay. I'm just saying.
And I just want to say that they're both moving in their seats and getting very excited at this topic.
The funny part is, everybody you talk to, all the way up to senior ranks, agree. But nobody's doing anything about it. I don't know why.
Oh, preach.
But anyway, that being said, when you step out right now of these, we usually manage talent, or the talent discussions are based on what? Competencies and ability to be promoted. Those are usually the two axes that people look at mainly. Why? Because I don't know that, you know, Todd is this uber smart, lovable, delivers kind of guy. And he's been in his position for like, what, 1.5, 2 years? Oh, so he's getting ready for promotion.
Mm.
So.
That was a weird response.
I can't salivate. It's radio. Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
But usually, I mean, you know, of course there are more more factors that go into these conversations, but really you look at it from two angles, right? Because the organizations, you know, the turnovers and everything else, and a lot of people retiring. So of course, we're in the race of making sure we have the right people at the right time in the right jobs. And so therefore we're looking at, do you need an assignment on the side to develop more competencies? Because then we're seeing you as the future of this or the future of that. But what happens when you're not interested? What happens when you say, well, thanks, I appreciate the compliment, but I don't want my manager's job? Or I certainly don't want my director's job, because I've seen that the manager works long hours, the director's works longer hours, and very rarely do I see a director general who does not have to devote a certain amount of hours on the weekend to catch up and maintain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you're not interested in those, then you become an anomaly. You become this great person, will just leave you there. Don't leave the person there. Continue to invest. Continue to develop. Continue to send to conferences and everything else. So these people started calling me and calling my wife saying, how did you guys do this? What do I do? I have this wonderful person who was talking to the last time and she's this young, bright woman, engaged, getting married, thinking about having kids, and her husband is this young, bright man, and they're both in the movement going up the ladders. And now they're worried. What if we have kids? What happened to this? What happened to that? So the last time I was mentoring was, I was like, why don't you invite your husband? And then I heard that they were talking, like they were inviting friends over and talking about the mentoring sessions and what I would have said. But that's just my humble opinion. I mean, and I don't mentor very well. I coach more. I ask questions. I'm always humbled by the fact that Usain Bolt has a coach. So if the coach was better than Usain Bolt, he'd be running.
Right.
Okay. So keep that in mind when, you know, you mentor these ones or coach these ones. So I ask a lot of questions. But then when what I realized is Tills was just my perspective and my questions. So I asked Jen if she wanted to join in. And so she did. And the last thing we knew was like there were 8 people on the phone because she invited her friends too. So, and that's the kind of thing, right? Like it's just wonderful to see these changes happening and these folks moving forward and asking these questions. So anyway, enough about PMAs, but in terms of talent management and mentoring and what it does and how do we advocate? So we do this, we do these podcasts. A lot of people ask me to go to their management teams. I talk about it. I talk about mobility. I demystify. I listen to but Simon, we meet with clients. Oh, sacrilege. You certainly don't want to meet them like on a video conferencing, right? You want to be face to face and disrupt them and have them come over and walk, or you have to go over there and walk and everything else and make it inefficient, right? So, you know, and we talk about it and but I think the best part that we do is I'm so proud of my team. My team is so disruptive, so present and mobile. I don't know. Even my admin assistant, people thought my admin assistant would never be able to telework, right? An admin assistant, she needs to be in the office. She teleworks at least 3 or 4 days a week.
That's great.
And she helps all the other admin assistants doing their stuff. So I'm just proud of my team at every level. Everybody does their part. And that brings genuine credibility to the fact that it works. So hopefully I won't have to do a podcast like this soon because it'll just be part of everyday life.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Simel. This has been a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And I look forward to the next one.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you very much. Keep sharing. Keep doing the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Innovate on Demand, brought to you by the Canada School of Public Service. Our music is by Grapes. I'm Todd Lyons, producer of this series. Thank you for listening.